This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the Jodcast. Robert Frank from DASY Institute in Germany, and you work on neutrino astronomy and a really cool new detector called IceCube. Can you tell me a bit about it, please?
Right, so IceCube is a recently finished neutrino detector located at the geographic South Pole deep in the ice. So the actual detector is about between one and a half and 2.5 kilometers deep in the ice, consists of about 5,000 photomultipliers, which are very sensitive light detectors that detect the Cherenkov of light, mainly from muons that go through the detector.
So first of all, what is Cherenkov light?
So Cherenkov of light happens when a relativistic particle travels through some medium like water, ice, or glass, and it's faster than the local speed of light. It's kind of the supersonic boom you get from an airplane. It's about the same thing.
And muons, are they particles with mass, or are they neutrinos?
So the muon is, you can see it as a heavy electron. It's about 200 times heavier than the electron, and it's unstable, it decays, so it you don't find it in your natural environment, but it's produced in high energy interactions of particles. For example, if a neutrino interacts with an atomic nucleus.
How high energy? Are we talking Large Hadron Collider energies? Are we talking higher energies than that?
So the energies we are looking for in IceCube are actually much higher than the Large Hadron, so what is produced in the Large Hadron Collider. We start with TeVs, which is actually comparable to Large Hadron Collider, but that's what we almost call low energy. And then you go up to PeVs, which is about 1,000 times higher, and we go even higher to EEV energies, which is yet another factor of 1,000.
Wow, so they're super, super high energies.
Right. That's like the highest energy particles that have ever been detected, for example, from cosmic rays. That's the energy range we're looking for.
So what sort of sources produce these really high energy particles?
Well, no one knows. That's the big question, the miracle of cosmic ray physics. We detect these particles coming from all directions in the sky, and we have a lot of models that predict where they could be produced, but there's no real hint of what these sources actually are. So some people have ideas about so-called active galactic nuclei, which are galaxies which have a massive black hole in their center, a lot bigger than the black hole in the center of our own Milky Way, and these black holes eat matter and put out a lot of energy, and this could be channeled into these particles.
And these muon particles, these come from all these really high energy sources, and they travel, I assume, very, very long distances. Do they retain all the energy, and how does the Earth and IceCube detect them?
So the main advantage of IceCube with looking at neutrinos is that neutrinos travel through the universe without any interaction. They're basically no interaction. So you have no problem seeing very far in the universe. But that's, of course, at the same time a problem if you want to detect them, because suddenly you want them to interact. So IceCube has to be very big. It's a cubic kilometer of ice. And very few of these neutrinos actually interact, and that's the big complication of IceCube. And you have to find these neutrinos in the big background of muon interactions you get from muons that are produced in the atmosphere. The ratio is about, for every neutrino you want to find, there are about 1 million atmospheric muons. So these are muons that are produced in the atmosphere above the detector, and you have to find this 1 in 1 million, and that's a big computational challenge, and that's where most of the work of the scientists actually goes into.
So in terms of numbers of neutrinos, I heard somewhere if you look at your thumb, which is about a square centimeter, there's about 10 to the 6 neutrinos going through your thumb in a minute. Is that about the right type of numbers, or are we talking even more or less?
So in a minute time, it's several billion of neutrinos going through your sun, but these are neutrinos coming from the sun, so these are very low energy neutrinos, not the target of IceCube. And the interesting thing is, I mean, it sounds very scary thinking about billions of neutrinos going through your body, not just your thumb, but in your whole lifetime, about one of these will interact with an atom in your body. So that might illustrate a bit how complicated it is to detect these particles.
And these high-energy neutrinos, how do they compare in terms of numbers to the neutrinos coming through the sun?
They are vastly less. So actually, as we haven't measured them yet, we are still looking for them. They must be their number must be much lower than the solar neutrinos, because these sources are so much further away. If you imagine the sun being put at a distance of a galaxy, you would not detect many neutrinos.
And I know that our listeners have listened to an interview about the snow detector, which is quite a small detector. And we talked about the different flavours of neutrinos, the three different flavours. Can Ice Cube detect these three sources?
Yes, Ice Cube can detect the muon, the electron, and the tau neutrino, and they make very different signatures in the detector. So the muon neutrino makes these tracks because you get a muon out of it, and the track, as you might imagine, enables you to find the direction of the neutrino, because the muon that is produced basically points in the same direction where the neutrino comes from. So you can look for sources in the sky. If you get an electron neutrino interaction, you get a cascade, which is like an explosion of light. It's like a ball of light going through the detector. You have a very hard time finding out where that electron neutrino came from, but you can measure the energy very well because the whole thing is contained in your detector. And the tau is a very funny thing because it can make a lot of different interactions, because you at one point produce the tau, which gives you kind of this ball of light, and then the tau has a very short lifetime because it's even heavier than the muon, and it decays. And depending on if you see that in your detector or if it happens outside of Ice Cube, you get another explosion. So we call these events double bang, or if you see only one part, it's a lollipop, or they are funny names for these patterns.
Is it different sources that produce these different neutrinos, or do they all come from the same type of source?
No, they all come from the same kind of source because there's a thing called neutrino oscillations. So there are different models on what kinds of neutrinos are produced, but on their way to the Earth, they oscillate, and you expect similar numbers for all three different flavors of neutrinos.
Ice Cube has been operating now for, is it less than a year?
No, Ice Cube actually operated now for more than 5 years because we gradually built the detector. You can only work at the South Pole during the summer, which is the winter here in the Northern Hemisphere. So you only have a couple of weeks where conditions are such that you can operate your drills and people can actually work outside for a long time. But after each year, we operated this partially completed detector and took really valid and very good science data, and we're analyzing that data, and now Ice Cube is complete since a couple of months, and we're gonna now take data with a complete detector, but we already know how to analyze it, so it's just one more step for us.
And has Ice Cube detected any of the high energy events, or has it just detected background neutrinos or neutrinos from the sun?
So we haven't really unambiguously identified an astrophysical neutrino. So we can set limits. We know now that certain sources are fainter than a certain limit, and that slowly starts to put constraints on some models. Theorists tell us what where the neutrinos are produced and what number, and slowly Ice Cube measurements start to constrain these models. So theorists have to become more creative.
Now the detector has been operating fully, how many events do you expect to sort of detect per year?
So from the muon neutrinos, we detect about 100,000 per year now. But at the same time where these atmospheric muons are produced, you also get atmospheric neutrinos. So also the atmosphere is a source of high-energy neutrinos. And these are these 100,000 which we detect each year. And then you have this basically uniform background of atmospheric neutrinos, and you have to look through those and try to see if there's a cosmic source behind it. It's a bit like looking into, you know, in a car light and try to see if there's a lamp in front of the car light.
Wow, so you've got some serious methods going on there to try and extract these astronomical sources. If a source like supernova 1987A goes off, which was detected in other neutrino events in, 1987. Would Ice Cube be able to detect these events?
Yes, definitely. It's these are, again, very low-energy neutrinos compared to the usual neutrinos we detect in Ice Cube, but they would lead to an increase in the noise rate. So these photomultipliers we have in the ice, they have a noise rate, like if you put your TV on on a channel where there is no signal from a TV station, you have this noise on your TV, and it's kind of the same thing happening in PMT. But if the supernova, this nearby supernova, would go off, you get a lot of very low energy interactions all across the ice, and this would lead to an increase in the noise rate over the whole detector. So this would be such a clear signal. And the interesting thing is that because of the wave readout of the detector, And because of the huge size of the detector, you could look at the time evolution of that signal. You could see when the neutrinos are produced in respect to the time when the supernova goes off. So it would give you a much more detailed view than we had on 1987A, for example. So that's what everyone's hoping for.
So have you got this link to other telescopes so they can all suddenly twist their heads towards any sources that would go off?
So in the supernova framework, there's the so-called SNEW supernova early warning system, which is a collection of neutrino detectors, and IceCube is, of course, part of it. But we also have a couple of other programs where we send alerts from IceCube to other detectors. For example, we have a program which is called the Optical Follow-Up, which sends alerts for... We're looking for multiplets in very short times of neutrinos, which might be coming from supernova explosions, faraway supernova explosions in other galaxies, or from gamma ray bursts that are very faraway sources, but on very high energy. And if we detect one of these multiplets, we send a trigger to a network of optical telescope, which is called ROTSI, and they look at that patch of the sky and try to find the afterglow of that event.
And while you've also been looking at point sources, so sources like gamma ray bursts, can the detections of the cross the whole sky tell you anything? Or any interesting science?
So there are searches for this so-called diffuse flux, where you... It might be that an individual source is too weak to be detected as a point source, but the whole sum of all the point sources in the sky lead to what people call the diffuse flux. But that's a really... So we're looking for it, but it's a really complicated search because you have to understand your background very well. You have to understand your atmospheric neutrino spectrum to such a degree that you could... At the high energy and really see the difference between astrophysical and the atmospheric flux. It's a really complicated but very worthwhile search.
So you have just been visiting the IceCube detector in the South Pole. Would you want to tell us a bit about your life out there for a few weeks, few months?
So I've been there, down there, now in January 2011 for about 2 weeks as a visiting scientist. And I was mainly doing software work there, but it's really interesting to be there and live there and really see the detector, because otherwise if you sit at a computer the whole day, it feels kind of virtual. But being down there at minus 40 degrees Celsius is a very nice experience.
Could you feel the cold? Is it cold as it looks when everyone's wrapped up really warm, or being quite happy? I heard you tell me before about the sauna you had.
So it's cold, and you get all the clothes, so all the really it's called extreme cold weather gear is provided for you, and you really need that. But for me, actually, the coldest parts were always my hands. That's because if you're doing physical work outside, you cannot really wear the very thick gloves, and if you get your hands out, it gets cold very fast. And otherwise, I had imagined it to be colder. So I had never experienced minus 40 degrees Celsius before. I had imagined it to be colder, but it's quite, you can manage for some time. And especially, yeah, you talked about the sauna. Especially, it's very easy to go out of the sauna in, you know, almost naked and stand outside for a couple of minutes. So that's what people usually do. They go to the sauna and then they go to the South Pole, which is about 20 meters behind the South Pole station. And you take a picture and it looks very scary, but actually you do not feel the cold in the first minutes out of the sauna.
And when you were there, were you visiting all the different detectors of IceCube around the site and playing with their technology?
So the as I said, IceCube is very deep in the ice, so you cannot actually see this, but there's a surface component which is called IceTop, and we did some work on these tanks. It's water, well, frozen water, so ice tanks in the at the top, which do cosmic ray physics, which also have these photomultipliers. And we did work with those, and I did work with the computers at the South Pole, which do the data analysis.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. It sounds like an awesome time you had out there, and very exciting physics. Cheers.
Cheers.